Good evening, and welcome to another episode of Nigeria Politics Weekly. As usual, my name is Michael, and co-hosting with me is Phoenix. Today, we have one guest. Our guest is Ose Aneni. Ose is a hotelier and member of the People's Democratic Party of Nigeria, one of the opposition parties. There's still a debate as to which is the leading opposition party. Is it Labour or PDP? But he's a member of the PDP. Now, we'll be discussing three topics today. First of all, we'll discuss news reports that the National Security Advisor, Nuhu Ribadu, has set up a security force to fight dollar racketeers who he alleges are responsible for the collapse of the Naira. Secondly, we'll discuss news reports that ECOWAS, the Economic Community for West African States, has lifted sanctions on Niger Republic and is going to restore electricity supply and resume air travel. Thirdly, we'll discuss reports that the central bank has introduced new rules for Bureau de Changes in Nigeria. It took me a while. It's Bureau de Change. Yes, that's sorry, my French is terrible. But the CBN has introduced new rules for them. And we're going to be discussing the potential impact of these new rules on the Naira and the economy. So, first of all, Phoenix, your national security advisor has set up a security force to fight dollar racketeers who he claims are responsible for the collapse of the Naira. Phoenix, is this how you address the collapse of the Naira? And how is Nuhu Ribadu going to, how is this security force going to hold the Naira up? Phoenix, can you expand further on Ribadu's program?
Hi, Michael, and thanks also for joining us this week. Hello, listeners. It's not like asking me to expand on Nuhu Ribadu's work. I mean, I wasn't there when the guy came up with the thing. I think the first thing that that came to my mind was like, perhaps they should have publicized his job description so we know exactly what this NSA is responsible for. You know, when they said that he had put together a task force to go after BDCs and to try to rescue the Naira, I guess that's been elevated to a security concern. Yeah, to your question about if this is how I would tackle the Naira crisis, if we may call it that, of course not. I mean, for the simple reason that, I mean, I try to learn from history, right? And we've seen that it doesn't work. Not only in Nigeria, we've seen everywhere that when you try to control your currency using non-monetary policy means or using, you know, going outside of the realm of what your central bank should be doing, in the right, using the tools that are available to them, you not only do not win that war, you lose it very badly, i.e. your currency loses even more value. We've seen it in Venezuela. We've seen it in Argentina. We've seen it in Nigeria, where in recent time, we know that Nigerian authorities were even cutting down trees, you know, to try to stop people who trade in foreign currency and some of the other draconian measures they were taking. So it can be assumed that this recent effort is going to fail as well, because it is just antithetical to what should be done. I always, when I discuss this with people, I say to them that, look, the fundamental flaw in the thinking of many Nigerian political leaders, and those, particularly those who tend to be given responsibility in the economic spaces, they do not understand that economic actors will always act with rationality, i.e. they will take rational decisions, they will take rational actions. They want to, you know, optimize outcomes for themselves. So if you create an economic situation where there is arbitrage, where there is where there are loopholes, of course they will take advantage of that. That is rational. It is because you have created those opportunities and they want to maximize their profit, they will do that. So ideally, what you should be doing is go back to look at the loopholes you've created, go and look at the opportunities that you've created and plug those opportunities using the right tools, and ultimately things will course correct in time. But then they try to use, force, they try to do, all sorts of things, and it always ends up, in a very comical way. But even more challenging for them this time, as it was that time, but even more so now, when we need external help more than before. The fact that you are doing this does not send the right message to people who you are wooing to either lend you money or invest in Nigeria or bring their businesses. In fact, we're seeing the opposite. We're seeing people living in droves. We're seeing, companies, multinationals, leaving Nigeria, giving up on Nigeria, instead of bringing more to invest, which was what we saw in the past. And so you doing this only sends, bad signals, to people to say, look, this is how these guys operate. They set up task forces, they go after you and all of that. Now, the EFCC is claiming that no, they are going after unlicensed people. So what I would say to them is, okay, if that's what you're doing, show us the ones that you've arrested and show evidence that they're unlicensed and make sure that they have their days in court. Because if you follow the so because if you do that, then of course, it will mean that you're following the rule of law and that people can, then heave a sigh of relief and say, okay, this is not just some heavy-handed tactic, but it's actually in the right spirit of ensuring there's a level playing field and, those who are maybe involved in criminality are being taken out of the marketplace. So we wait to see them do that, but quite frankly, this is the wrong thing to do at the worst time possible.
Thank you, Phoenix. Osa, the National Security Advisor, the first thing he did was in this war against this war to rescue the Naira, he sent the security forces to areas where Bureau d'Echanges were, and there was exchange of gunfire between his security forces and apparently the security forces of the Bureau d'Echanges owners. I didn't realize they too were armed. This was news to me, but there was exchange of gunfire. And then on the other hand, you had your old friend Ayobami Oyalowo on TV, who they claim he's a political economist, blaming Binance for the collapse of the Naira. So can you explain, does the PDP agree with this strategy being adopted by this APC government? Is this what you guys consider to be the right way to deal with this problem?
Hi guys, it's been a while. Glad to be back. Of course not. And I think just like Phoenix said, we do have the advantage of history on how not to deal with FX speculation. I really don't get it. Like Phoenix again said, we've tried this before. We've cut down trees to try to stop the devaluation of the naira. So it boggles the mind where the NSA comes out and says the EFCC actually has just composed a 7,000, I think, 7,000 man strong special task force, and because that isn't working, we're going to apply more men and guns, to try and solve the problem. But this time we're going to do it with the CBN, and this should be the silver bullet. It makes no sense. The first thing I saw when I saw the images, because they were broadcast all over the news, of guns at BDC shops, was that there's going to be an immediate rise in the price of dollar because you have instantly created more scarcity. I cannot get FX from a bank, so I go to the BDC. If you drive BDC operators underground, you create even more scarcity. You make your black market even blacker, and prices will go up. So I don't know what happens, what type of thinking goes on in ASUU Rock these days, but it clearly isn't the PDP's policy. In as much as I can, I can say I want to try and speak for my party. It doesn't make sense. There's so much confusion. There's so much chaos, I think. And because I truly believe that people are rational creatures, I don't think it can be accidental. I think what's happening is that just like we saw under Buhari, dollar millionaires or naira millionaires at least are being created. I think that's what's happening. People are actually, almost like doing insider trading on the policies of this government because they are so chaotic. I recall there are some tech founders taking pictures a while ago with the CBN, and then I wonder when policies like this come out, almost criminalizing again these fintech platforms. I don't know the kind of signals it's sending to the rest of the world. It clearly isn't that we are open already for business. And so that isn't the PDP way, as again, as much as I can speak for the PDP.
Thank you, Osei. Phoenix, we need to dig deeper into this problem because when you think about it, you have the likes of Wale Edun, who is supposedly a Western-educated finance professional. And then you have the governor of Central Bank, Yemi Cardoso, who Twitter people call Cardi B. He's also Western-educated and described as someone who's had considerable finance experience. So, why or how did we get to this point where they think the solution to the collapse of the Naira is to send the security forces to start opening fire on currency traders? Or where did they get this idea that banning Binance and other crypto type trading is the source of this problem? Can you talk us through how we arrived here, Phoenix?
Michael, it's simply a lack of ideas, which we've said from this time last year or even before, during the election season, and saying that, look, I mean, a Tinubu presidency represents, I mean, one of the worst things that can happen from an ideas perspective, and so one is not surprised by what they are resorting to. It starts with the kinds of people that you appoint into office, and you're like, okay, you've appointed the largest number of ministers we've ever seen, but none of them were, giving us any excitement that you were going to see anything new or anything creative or of the sort. And so then you begin to say, okay, put out your policies, let's see what you're going to do. Especially when at inauguration you were very bullish and declaring that subsidy is gone, telling us that you're going to work to harmonize FX rates. But you see, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. It's when it was now time to actually do the work, you see that they had no plan, no preparation, and nothing to offer. And so it is in that regard when they then see, I mean, the naira going significantly, the value of the naira going significantly south. They're going to try in desperation anything that comes to mind. And when you sit in a room full of people who are, quite frankly, incompetent, maybe the loudest voices are the ones who are coming to the fore and saying all sorts of things. We've seen one of the spokesmen to the president, Bayo Onanuga. I mean, I don't know if you saw his Twitter rants and going after ordinary citizens and talking about the Binance angle. You can imagine those kinds of things that he's putting out in public on Twitter are the same conversations they're having in private when they are deliberating what actions they should take. So if that's the kind of view that they hold, why are we surprised at the kind of things that they're going after? There are fundamental things that they need to do, which is leave the central bank to manage monetary policy and also ensure that they keep their eye on the naira. I have been adamant saying to everyone that, look, and we've said it on this podcast, it's not your job to be fixated on the naira. The naira is a representation of the economy that you have. And so your wish for a strong naira, while not doing the things that will make your economy vibrant, that will make it productive, that will enable exports, that would create jobs, create productivity, and all of that, it's just a fool's dream. You're looking after the effect and not the cause. You're going after something that is the symbol rather than the root cause, and so you will continue to fail. There's really nothing you can do about it, especially when politics creeps in. When you tell us subsidy is gone, but we also know you're still paying subsidy. You tell us you want to harmonize, FX, but you're still fiddling with it and creating arbitrage opportunities. You securitize ways and means, but we still see that you're still expanding money supply, and obviously you are still borrowing money to the government. So there's still a lot of money chasing the dollar because people are, we've seen the Better Edus of this world. We've seen all of this, crisis already in this short time of government, which tells us that some of the subsidy savings that we are seeing, from having removed, some of the subsidy, is why going into private pockets. And once those people get it, of course they are looking to translate it into dollar, which is what is great. So it's the government itself that is the enemy of itself. So for me, when you ask why do, despite having some good names at the table, why are they still struggling? It is because the preponderance of people who are around this government are charlatans who do not know what they're trying to do and who should not be where they are today. And that's why you see that they do not have clear plans and will not be able to achieve anything, given where they are. I mean, for people who would resort to these kinds of tactics, you already know that this is desperation and they have nothing to offer.
Thank
Yeah,
you.
very, very
Thank
quickly,
you, Phoenix.
very, very quickly, Michael. Since we're talking specifically about Ribadu as a national security advisor, I think it also is like we opened with a misunderstanding of what national security actually entails. And I think for some reason, this government believes that their government will rise and fall on the price of the dollar. So instead of focusing on things that can actually topple their government, like rising food inflation, insecurity, and food scarcity, they're betting everything on reducing the naira to the dollar exchange rate. It doesn't make any sense to me. And Phoenix is absolutely correct. They're not lauding it, but we know fuel subsidy is back. And we now have multiple exchange rates again. And like I said, the average arbitrage opportunities they have again created means that more millionaires who have access to official FX can just very, very quickly become millionaires. And then, of course, it starts to make sense, like because we are rational, it starts to make sense why this madness persists.
Thank you, Osei. Well, my final point on this question on this issue is Ribadu served under the Obasanjo administration, where the likes of Okonjo-Iweala were present, Charles Soludo, Nasir El-Rufai, Obi Ezekwesili. So he was exposed to the free market ideology of these individuals. In fact, he had a very close relationship with the governor of the head of the World Bank at the time, Paul Wolfowitz. If you remember, when Paul Wolfowitz even got into trouble and was forced to resign, Ribadu was one of the people who wrote an op-ed in defense of Paul Wolfowitz. So the question is, despite all that exposure and then studying at Oxford University and attending NIPS, how did he then decide that the best way to address these matters was by getting security forces to chase currency traders? There seems to be a sort of Jekyll and Hyde type character here, Osei, don't you agree?
I don't agree. A hammer in the hands of an architect is still a hammer. Ribadu has never been, presented and has never presented himself as the sharpest tool in the box. He just happened to be amongst people who were a little bit brighter than he was, and he was the muscle in that grouping, if you remember, how Obasanjo used him to have his way with politicians, legislators, and even potential presidential candidates. So I'm not surprised that he would struggle with an appreciation of what's required to solve the problem. At its most basic form, it's simply a demand and supply issue. I haven't ever heard Ribadu speak in language that would lead me to believe or to have an expectation that he should be dabbling in economic matters. And so for the life of me, I cannot understand why he is doing so. But again, he's a patriotic fellow, I guess, and so maybe he wants to do some good with the limited skills he does have. And I'm trying not to be disrespectful. I'm just, making a reason of who I think he is. And he's probably is doing his best, but clearly, he doesn't have the capacity or capabilities to handle this current crisis. And I'm not surprised again, just making looking at Tinubu's appointment. I thought Wale Edun was going to do great. But again, nobody looking at Cardoso's profile, especially with his record with Tinubu, expected him to perform better than he's doing now.
Well, thank you, Osei. And Nuhu Ribadu, if you're listening, please note it was Osei who said that you are basically doing your best and this is the best you can do. So should you decide to send your security forces to kidnap anyone, make sure it's Osei Aneni you hold on to. But anyway, on to our second topic, which is ECOWAS, the Economic Community for West African States. We had to memorize the meaning of ECOWAS in primary school. I think since then, the definition has stayed in my head. But yes, Phoenix, ECOWAS seems to be one step forward, two steps back. When Bola Tinubu came into office, all gung-ho, issued an ultimatum. I think it was a three-day ultimatum telling Niger Republic in particular that if they don't revert to democracy, he will show them pepper, as they say in Nigeria. But now we're here and he's withdrawn sanctions and nothing seems to have changed. They defied Bola Tinubu. Phoenix, how did Nigeria get to this point where we blew hot and then we're now blowing cold and now we basically retreated with our tails between our legs? How, why is Nigeria in this predicament, Phoenix?
Well, we're in this predicament because we didn't have a clear, again, I go back to election season and when they were asking this man questions about what he was going to offer and he was dancing up and down. And I mean, I'm not surprised. These are the kinds of questions that should have come up. But obviously, with someone who was ducking and dodging up and down the whole place, and of course, the woeful performance at Chatham House, where he was sent passing questions to other people, he wasn't interrogated because he came into office clearly with no clear foreign policy agenda. As a president of Nigeria, my expectation, this is me, if you are vying for the presidency of Nigeria and you look at the landscape, and you're thinking foreign policy, not internal now, you're looking external. Your first two constituencies are ECOWAS and the AU. And then beyond that, you begin to say, okay, where do we want to play, and what have we historically done? Who are our friends? Nigeria, I think in the 80s and 90s, we were largely part of that non-aligned movement. We won't piss anybody off, but we knew that we were leaning west, but tried to form center. So there was an ideology. There was a plan. And so when I say your first two constituencies are ECOWAS and the AU, and more so ECOWAS, because that's our sub-region. You want to first of all make sure the people around you, the zone around you, is secure, is safe, you can wield your influence, especially being very clearly the bigger brother among the nation states around you. And at a time where we had the chairmanship of ECOWAS, you would expect a very clear agenda and a plan. But there wasn't any. Instead, dude had just taken over presidency and decided to start flexing muscle. Maybe somebody told him, small Niger, just we're the ones giving them electricity. You can just bugger them and they will answer you, they'll listen to you. To you. And to your point, he went in with all bluster, threatening to, leading ostensibly ECOWAS to threaten to attack, them in response to the coup that happened in Niger. And of course, it escalated. And before you knew it, Nigeria was backing away from those threats with tail between the legs. And then, we now saw Niger and Burkina Faso and Mali, throw down the gauntlet and then say that, look, we're even tired of this nonsense. We're leaving ECOWAS entirely, which is a huge slap in the face. You've inherited the chairmanship of ECOWAS, and you are presiding over the period that the sub-regional body, instead of growing and bringing more benefits to West Africans, it's going to splinter. And so one can understand that, the people who are more experienced and savvy at diplomacy and things like this have waded in and are now trying to clean up the mess that was made by President Tinubu, and his lack of experience and lack of know-how in this space. And now they're trying to reach an agreement with these nations to ensure that ECOWAS is kept together, and also to return to dialogue to be able to get them to have plans to return to democracy, which is the objective, right? The objective is, look, we don't want military coups, we don't want military leadership, but you have to have discussions. You can't be going straight to the nuclear option before you have fully exhausted all discussions, before you have had, the right conversations. And so now they're gonna begin to unwind a lot of those things and, lift the sanctions, have discussions. Of course, they've also put some conditions though, that, for example, in Niger, the former president who's still held up in the presidential palace should be let go with his family, and then they can have, for the discussions. But it was clear that, I mean, this was number one, as I said, a lack of a plan. Number two, a lack of savvy and understanding, and just, unnecessary bluster that just cost Nigeria some face. And hopefully we can retrace our steps and, find a way to restore some of the, authority that we have in the region to move forward.
Thank you, Phoenix. Well said. There is this theory going round, and it goes like this, that apparently Nuhu Ribadu and Bola Tinubu were so concerned about the risk of an uprising in northern Nigeria because of food prices and the economic crisis, that They thought that softening relations with Niger would help to calm northern anger, because apparently northern Nigeria is irate about the fact that some of them call them their cousins, are being ostracized by Nigeria. Is there any truth to this rumor, Osei? Is this the real reason why Bola Tinubu has decided to go soft on Niger?
I mean, we can only speculate, but it does make sense. I keep on saying that, we are rational actors. And if you recall, Tinubu came in with, I think he came in with a minority percentage of the vote. He didn't get the majority of all votes cast. I think he's one of the few presidents, or probably the only president that has come in with a minority mandate. And there was a lot of resistance and resentment around his presidency. And what he tried to do was initially build bridges across the nation, but nothing unites a nation faster, especially Nigeria, faster than football and war. And if you look across the world, look at Churchill or Bush or any other president, when you have problems at home, create some foreign bogey threats, and the nation, comes together behind your leadership. And I think he thought he could get away with that with Niger, but it goes back to, I think, a clear misunderstanding of Nigeria and how Nigeria relates with its near abroad by the Lagos politicians that surround Tinubu. And so they didn't realize how almost incestuous, Northern Nigeria is with Niger, and the other, and Mali, and all the other nations around it. And you actually saw, I don't know if you guys remember seeing Nigerian northern politicians coming on national television saying they would fight with Niger if Nigeria went to war with them. And it was that pressure, I think, that sort of like forced Tinubu's government to tone down the rhetoric and pull back. And so, if they did it back then to try to rally support around their presidency, it does make sense now that you are seeing food riots, which is why, it boggles my mind that instead of focusing on that, Tinubu is focusing on BDC operators. It then makes sense to say, you know what, let's offer carrots to these guys. Let's bring Niger back into the fold, because it's the only thing that makes sense. If that isn't the reason, then ECOWAS has lost confidence in Tinubu's leadership, because Mali, Burkina Faso, and Guinea haven't done anything to deserve the lifting of all sanctions, including lifting travel bans on the junta's officials and family members, including lifting freezing of their assets. So when ECOWAS cloaks, the reasons behind the withdrawal of sanctions as because of humanitarian concerns and sub-regional insecurity, it's hogwash. So I would absolutely buy what you're selling if you said because they're trying to appease Northern Nigeria. I think it's a gesture that will be appreciated, but it's a band-aid. It's not a permanent solution. If people are starving, people will look for food. And you guys, again, must have seen videos of trucks and trailers being looted by, roadside Nigerians, people just standing by the side of the road. And my worry is, again, food inflation is one of the, and food scarcity now are the two, of course, it's the same thing. It's the greatest concern I have about Nigeria's stability. If the government doesn't find some way of solving it, things will only continue to degenerate. That sort of is what I feel about it. It makes absolute sense. I agree with you. I agree with you, and it makes sense. It makes sense. That's some smart thinking by Tinubu, if that's the reason why they've lifted it.
Thank you, sir. Now, Phoenix, you remember, I'm sure you're old enough to remember when Obasanjo was president of Nigeria, PDP president of Nigeria. And if there was any crisis, Obasanjo would literally pick up the phone and ring the president of that state, especially if it was one of the, in quotations, smaller countries in West Africa. He would literally get on the phone to them and things would be done immediately. Sometimes he'd even issue threats and they would back down and fall in line. Now, a number of people have said, and Obasanjo as president, there was no way Niger would have defied Nigeria the way they did. Is that your reading of the situation? Do you think Nigeria has fallen from its big brother status that it used to have during the PDP years, Phoenix?
I think there's no doubt that Nigeria has fallen. I mean, in Nigeria, I mean, in the past, you would never have seen Nigeria issuing threats to a country like Niger with the level of support that we give to them and not get a reaction. We're clearly seeing that Nigeria, the bluff was called, and Osei is absolutely right. I mean, it's even more egregious that they haven't, those countries haven't done anything to walk back from what they've done. It is ECOWAS that is actually granting concessions without even assurances that, I mean, that, or seeing that the countries have, you know, started to do better or fix the issues that they raised in the first instance. So there's no doubt that Nigeria has stepped back from that role, which is one of the things I was saying earlier. There was, especially in this current situation. But you see, when Nigeria can wield influence, you know, there's this thing about wielding influence when you are in a better place, right? If you're not in a better place and people can quite clearly see you struggling, you know, in your own space, it makes them question, you know, why are we even worried about this country in the first instance? Let's not forget, a lot of the countries around us have seen us struggle for over a decade with insecurity. They get all the same reports. So they know that we are stretched. They know that we're struggling. So militarily, we're not where we were when we were the police of the region. When you put ECOMOG in place and we were the ones, you know, helping to quiet things down. On the political front, they know that we're not in a good place. There's a lot of, you know, ethnic rhetoric, religious rhetoric. So we're not one, really, truly one nation. So people also see that. And of course, that makes your voice a bit less, you know, have a bit less base when you speak to people outside, because they're like, even in your shop, you're not together. So, you know, and then the final point I'll make is from an economic perspective. We were always the economic superpower in our region, near Africa, but we're not. You know, we're still the economic superpower in West Africa, but we've had too many troubles in recent times. We've come to two. We may even have another recession in the last 8 years. We've come through, you know, significant devaluation of our currency. We were struggling. So when you put all those things together, it is easy for your West African brothers to look at you and say, you don't have that same, you know, you don't have that same aura that you used to have. And especially when you then elect a president, which was the great point that Osei was making, when you then elect a president who is not popular, who did not get enough votes and people are challenging his legitimacy and all those kind of things. You add all of that together, it is clear that it does put a dent in Nigeria's image, and it makes countries that would hitherto have listened, you know, to be like, no, you have to show me why I should listen to you instead of doing what I want to do. And so for me, those, you know, clearly we have a problem with our image at this point in time, and there's a lot of work that needs to be done, which starts again with looking inwards, fixing our problems, and then being able to project as we should at least within our sub-region, if not across the entire continent.
Thank you, Phoenix. Now on to our final topic, which is the new rules introduced by the Central Bank for Bureau d'Echanges. Apologies if my French is terrible. Apologies to our French listeners, Bureau d'Echange. I should have listened in primary school French, but I wasn't paying attention. Only God knows what I was doing. But anyway, so let's start with you again, Phoenix. So can you explain to us in simple terms, like you're talking to kids or children, what are these new rules that the CBN has introduced?
So what we've seen the CBN try to do is to basically they're trying to control FX availability, access, trading within the country. The BDCs serve as, the access for consumers who cannot go to a CBN window or an official window to purchase FX for valid reasons to be able to purchase their FX. So the central bank licenses this Bureau de Change and allows them to, buy and sell, foreign currency to Nigerians based on the rules and guidelines from the central bank. So it's not as if they just, they are unlicensed. Now, of course, the history of Bureau de Change in Nigeria, we've seen, over time, different approaches depending on who's the central bank governor, right? There was a time when Soludo was very, restricted the proliferation of Bureau de Change because you also want to control how they are out there, because the more you have, creates problems for you to truly be able to manage your currency. But then we had Sanusi, who came in with a different agenda, licensed several Bureau de Change, gave them significant access to the dollar, and we saw a proliferation of the Bureau de Change and all of that. Now we're seeing Cardozo and his team coming with new rules, which raises the bar of entry for a Bureau de Change. They've created two tiers. Tier one requires $2 billion in sorry, 2 billion naira in capital for you to be a Bureau de Change, and tier two requires 500 million. Now, bear in mind that I think before it used to be 35 million, if I remember correctly, or something of that sort. So it's a significant step up for you to be qualified to be a Bureau de Change, which naturally means that there will be some consolidation, and some will need to drop out, and they will be bought, taken over, and you have similar to what happened when we had the banking consolidation, when they raised capital, market capitalization, and that weeded out from 89 to 25 banks. So you see that. Now, what does that do for the central bank? What it allows them to do is to have fewer Bureau de Change that they can control, and therefore have more efficacy of the rules that they will put in place that then make sure that, they then are able to control how Naira is exchanged for the dollar in the country, and therefore be able to, manage the rates, because at the end of the day, that's the ultimate thing that they're trying to do. Now, whether they will be successful is a different question, and we wait to see how it all plays out in the end. It also came with some other rules that they tightened, in terms of how much people can access, how much you can buy in cash. So if you ask me, I think it's a step in the right direction, because good regulation, making sure that you have the right control. What is important is to make is to make sure that these are not things that then push people to black market outside of the regulated space and widen that space that continues to create, problems for them.
Thank you, Phoenix. Now, Jose, Does your party have a position on these new rules? Do they think they will help the economy, or do you think they're going to be an obstacle to economic growth?
I think my party has a position on everything the APC is doing. I mean, if the APC does it, it's bad. But more seriously, though, I think I agree with Phoenix. I'm not sure how the markets will react. When I say the market, I mean the black market to raising the minimum cap from 35 million to 2 billion. I think it was for tier one. I don't know if that will improve supply because you now have larger players who can maybe mop up or attract more FX. It definitely will be easier for the CBN to track and regulate. But I don't know how then, if you look at it, if you look at the logistics of it, I don't then know how the average Nigerian who just needs $1,000 or $2,000 is able to access it easier with these new rules. I think a lot of the fintech platforms are going to be concerned because most of them were building apps and platforms and solutions that would allow that were solve trying to solve around Nigeria's inefficiency, and it's a problem, and it's a conversation that you do see online, how instead of trying to fix a problem, you see people trying to find workarounds. And so a lot of investment and time and effort has gone into trying to fix the CBN's inefficiencies in allowing average Nigerians access and transfer and transact in FX. And these new rules seem to suggest that if you are not a licensed BDC, you cannot do anything of the sort. And it's a concern. The Naira was the worst performing currency in the world in 2003, at the end of 2003, under this administration. It's depreciated by about 68 or 70% since Tinubu has been in office. And it doesn't seem, nothing they try, nothing his CBN has tried seems to work. And again, it goes back to simple things like putting the right people in place. I campaigned heavily for Kingsley Moghalu to be made CBN Central Bank Governor. Not necessarily because he would have been the best, but simply because he understood, he displayed and was able to articulate in a way and manner anybody could understand what the problems were and what he thought the solutions had to be. That also doesn't strike me as that sort of person. And so when you hear him, on in the National Assembly talking about students, or the demand for FX to pay school fees being the problem with Nigeria, you question again, just like I did with Ribadi, you question his competence. I don't want to dismiss out of hand these new rules because, again, I don't know how the market will respond to the emergence of these bigger BDCs. It worked for the banking sector, so I'm happy that the Tinubu government seems to be taking a page out of our book. But we'll see whether they're able to execute. They bungled, they took our subsidy idea and bungled it. We'll see whether they bungle this as well.
Thank you, Phoenix. Also, Phoenix, thank you, Ose. Phoenix, you've heard what Ose was saying, and he touched on the fact that a number of fintechs had been doing some research or market research in that space, trying to see if they could solve the problem of people accessing Forex more efficiently and quickly. And I suppose the question is, does this send the right signals to fintechs who wish to invest in Nigeria, that Nigeria is open for business if you want to get into the remittance and currency trading space? Does this send the right message to them, Phoenix?
I think it doesn't send a discouraging message. I think there are some positives that should make the fintechs even more interested. For example, it's a key theme of the new rules is the push for cashless transactions. You could see very clearly that they're trying to push BDCs away from cash, like anything above 10,000, you need to do source of funds. 75% of the transaction has to be by transfer, only 25% by cash. So you can see very clearly that it's geared towards an online process. Now, if that's the case, that should be right up the fintech streets, right? And for me, that's something I also agree with. I mean, the dollar is not the legal tender in Nigeria. There's no reason why you need dollar cash in the country, right? You should need it when you are traveling, but there are even means for which you can carry FX from Nigeria abroad, using, debit cards, or as long as they work, or, in the past, it used to be traveler's checks and things like that. So, knowing fully well that, corruption and a lot of the things that really create challenges in the country from a financial perspective tend to be from cash. Now, that could that that and they are trying to push that away again, insisting that people who buy from BDCs must have BVN, must have NIN, trying to push more into that online space. For me, that should only be more interesting for fintechs, and therefore, they should therefore be able to create solutions around that and ensure that it works well for them. So I look forward to seeing how, like as I said, how the market reacts, and if these rules actually take hold and we see, an effective setup. I mean, the bottom line is this: without solving the supply issue, you are not solving the underlying problem of, effects in Nigeria or the devaluation of the naira. So yes, the rules will help to control and regulate the market, but if there's still no supply, you're still not going to see a strong naira if that's your aim. And even worse, if that supply issue is not solved, if people who legitimately have, who need FX cannot get it and are forced to the black market, you will continue to see a divergence, and that is even more worrisome. So they need to do not only release new rules, but they also need to make sure that they remove all the things that are hindering having, FDI, having FPI come in, having, dollar flows return, all those kinds of things.
Thank you, Phoenix. Now, Osei, the final question goes to you. Because since Bola Tinubu's administration, the CBN has released a raft of rules, either for the banks or Bureau de Changes. And it's one thing to produce rules, but it's another thing to ensure that they're enforced. And the question a number of people are asking is, given the current state of our judiciary and the general disregard for the rule of law that this administration has shown, how confident are we that people are actually going to follow the rules that the CBN is imposing? And how confident are we that if these rules are breached, any action will be taken place, any action will be taken against the defaulters? We'll say.
So early on in our conversation today, I think it was Phoenix who mentioned Beta Edu. I'll also add into the mix the Minister of Interior, the superstar Minister of Interior. And nothing has happened to them, even though they appear to both have been allegedly caught. I don't want to get sued with their hands in the cookie jar. And so, when you read the CBN, when you read the new rules, There was a portion that made me laugh, and they were warning BDC not to sell to politicians. And that right there is the problem. If the CBN is saying that these guys are the problem, then I don't see how enforcement, when you break the law, because the people who will be breaking the laws to the scale where the EFCC and the NSA and the CBN are going to get involved, literally are people who are above the law. It's not you and me, Phoenix, and Gege. So enforcement, apart from maybe a slap on the wrist, I don't think it happens. I don't think it changes anything really. Again, I think the only real takeaway from this would just be regulatory, in the sense that it sort of like changes who the players are within that space. And I'm not as confident as Phoenix is that, there will be opportunities for players not in bed with the regime. I don't think that's going to happen. We haven't seen that happen anywhere else in the, have they been in office for a year? In the almost 1 year they've been in office, I haven't seen any suggestion that that is how they operate. So I don't think we're going to have a free and open playing field for anybody with a brilliant idea and gumption to come and succeed. I don't think that will happen.
Thank you, sir. So I'm sure you are a politician. So this exemption would apply to you, I presume.
A failed
Is it? Oh, yes, that is true. But anyway, our time is up. So first of all, thank you, sir, for taking time out of your busy schedule to be here. We obviously like to have you back soon to discuss your party's performance in Edo State, and hopefully you can bring your candidate here, Asue Igodalo, for a grilling on the podcast in the near future. And then thank you again.
If you guys promise to play nice, I'll bring you on.
We'll be as nice as possible to Mr. Igodalo. Yes. And then
No
thank
worries.
you. Thank you, Phoenix, as well, for co-hosting. And until same time next week, I say have a fantastic 7 days to all our listeners.
Thanks, Michael, and thanks again also for joining us. Thanks, listeners. Have a great week ahead.
Always a pleasure, guys. Bye, everyone.